And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You were listening to Archie Shepp, Semper, Malcolm Semper. And our guest is Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
Yes, sir. How are you doing? Can you hear me good and clear?
Can we hear you clear? Archie was clear and you're clear. I should tell people you not only did you write a great article about Malcolm X, it appeared in Pambazooka and Counterpunch and Black Agenda Report, but you know something about Mr. Archie Shepp who we were just listening to. Tell us about why did Archie Shepp care about this? What was his attachment to Malcolm?
First of all, Archie Shepp was he's still in the land of the living, and he just turned 80. His 80th birthday was on earlier this month, and I did a tribute to him. But he did his first. I think John Coltrane helped him get his record deal with Impulse Records, and he did an album called Fire Music, and he dedicated that song to Malcolm X. That was in 1965. But Archie Shepp I have met him many times, but the first time I saw Archie Shepp, he was in Amiri Baraka's Spirit House. That was in 1967. I was in Newark, New Jersey, mm-hmm. and I was, as they say, slipping into darkness. I was underground at that time. But I knew Archie Shepp because I used to read his columns in Downbeat magazine. And he considered himself a Marxist-Leninist. He wrote a column in Downbeat magazine. He called for the victory for the Vietnamese people. He supported Cuba. He was very Afrocentric. He was also in Algeria in 1969. Mm-hmm. And I've been in contact with him since the early 70s. And I consider him a friend and a mentor. And my show is called Diasporic Music, and I named my show Diasporic Music because of him.
Wow.
He called Diasporic Music. Diasporic Music. It's all the music that's made out of the diaspora. And I know that as a person born in the South, I know it's supposed to be, just to let people know it's diasporic, but we say it the way we want to say it. Diasporic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're among the people who make language. Not yes, obey
yes.
it.
Right.
If you need a new word, make it up.
I agree with George Bernard Shaw.
You have to, exactly. He said that in many different ways. My favorite one from Shaw was he said, the rational man is the one who adjusts to the world around him. The irrational man is the one who insists on the world changing. Therefore, all progress depends upon the irrational man. And George, he get us all in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, you point out Archie Shepp is 80. Malcolm X would have been 92.
Yes.
And the way he conducted himself, he hadn't been assassinated, he'd probably still be with us too. Your article begins with a really important point, I believe. You cite Malcolm X saying, of all of our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Nice, nice quote. Why did you pick that out?
You know, that's one of the that is probably the quote that all my adult life. I was a very poor student. I graduated at the bottom of my class in high school. But once I it was my fault. It wasn't. You know, my parents taught me to go to school and try to learn, but I was a real goof off.
Yeah.
Well, once I
found that's like that Merle Haggard song, Mama Tried.
Yeah. And you know, when I read that particular quote, it just made so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself I'm a bottom of the pile type of historian. So mm-hmm. that basically is what drives me is that history is best qualified to reward our research, and that's what I learned from Malcolm. And the fact that Malcolm he only had an eighth grade education, and his leader and teacher And Mr. Muhammad only had a fourth grade education. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely not arguing against people going to school and getting degrees, PhDs or whatever, but you don't necessarily have to go through the European system in order to be an intellectual. That's
well, learning is your job, not the teacher's. I mean, the education system teaches what it teaches, but if you want to find out, you can go and, as a lot of famous people did, they go to the public library and start. Which brings me to another great comment. I'd never seen this before. In your article, you point out that when Malcolm was running courses, teaching people how to be leaders, he said, bring a notebook, bring your dictionaries, get a thesaurus, and prepare yourself, keep track, study etymology.
Right. And a library card and an open mind.
Library card. I left that out. The key one, get yourself a library card. By the way, isn't it Sue? I recall from when I first heard of Malcolm, he was a history teacher. I know that. I did watch him give a talk once in Berkeley. And you always went away saying, oh, I got to look that up. Is that true? And my understanding is while he was in prison, he read W.E.B. Du Bois, Black Reconstruction.
He read everything. J.A. Rogers, he talked about J.A. Rogers. He talked about Du Bois. He talked about Robeson. I mean, he was in prison for 8 years, I believe. So, he copied the whole dictionary. Yeah, he copied the whole dictionary, and he was very, very good with words. And, there seems to be people that went to prison, a lot of people that went to prison were very into William Shakespeare. Al Prentice Bunchy Carter, who was the head of deputy minister of defense of the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party, could quote Shakespeare backwards, forwards, and sideways as Malcolm could,
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the old thing of having command of the culture that's around you so that you understand it, all the pieces. I was also very struck in your article. You have a quote from Malcolm talking about the importance of languages and how he was somewhat humiliated by not knowing more, and he was working on, was it Arabic and Chinese? He said the Chinese are very important, is very important for us politically, and of course Arabic for religion. But he tells a story, which you quote, of being in Africa and hearing various African languages and being embarrassed that he had to be standing there saying, what did he say?
Right. He was, I think he said that he pointed out he wanted to learn Hausa and Swahili. Mm-hmm. And, Hausa, I guess, is they speak Hausa in Hausa is like a language that they speak across borders. And Swahili as well. But I was very surprised that Malcolm didn't include Spanish because, Malcolm came out of New York City. And I remember that I never saw Malcolm. He came to California once. I shouldn't say no. He came to California to the Olympic Auditorium. You know the Olympic Auditorium, Phil, right?
Vaguely. No, yes. Are we talking about the one in Los Angeles?
Yes.
I saw him at the University of California campus.
Oh, no. I never saw him, but they said he was, when he came to California to the Olympic, to that auditorium, he spoke in Spanish, and he said, he made fun of Black people in Los Angeles, the way that they walked and talked, about how, Black people in Los Angeles had a certain way, men had a certain way of walking, and he was saying that how hip you are, but you guys don't realize that all men are brothers, but the white man is the devil, and he said that in Spanish.
Diablo.
Yeah, but I didn't. He didn't include Spanish as a language that we should learn, and George mm-hmm. Jackson, I think I quoted George Jackson, said yes. that language was, you know, we speak Mexico, Chile.
Yes.
Language is, we used to, not fight, but we used to have debates with some of our other nationalist friends in California because they said we should study Swahili, mm-hmm. and many of us, some of us said we shouldn't study any African language. That was not my position. My position was, yes, we should study Swahili, but we should also study Spanish because we have to communicate with, first of all, the people we're living on. California is part of Mexico.
Yes.
We have to communicate with Cuba, with Puerto Rico, with Chile.
Yes. You said the magic word, Puerto Rico, which is now in the headlines once again, and Puerto Rico is a undying national question that nags at the United States. It's a conquered territory, which it doesn't belong to the U.S. And if you're in New York City or Chicago, and you are a part of a black national movement, a movement against colonialism, your first allies would be Puerto Ricans.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. This article, by the way, I want our listeners to know, it's titled Malcolm X in the 21st Century, published by Pambazuca News. You can also find it at Counterpunch and Black Agenda Report, all great publications. And we're speaking, of course, to Norman Otis Richmond, who, as I mentioned, also a bluesologist. You, of course, talk about a man who was in transition, just as the ground was moving around him. He was... at the time of his assassination, he was not finally defined, you might say, in terms of what his ideology was going to be. But you do say that he was inclined. He was definitely part of the anti-colonial struggle, national struggle, and he was inclined towards socialism. Is that right?
Yes. And, you know, there's many types of socialism. There was someone jumped on me on the internet saying that Malcolm was leaning towards socialism. And, of course, there's many different types of socialism. I personally, just to get myself in big trouble, I personally believe in scientific socialism,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a. communism. But
uh-huh.
I'm not saying that was Malcolm's position, because you have African socialism, you have Arab socialism and Ujamaa, so on and so forth. But like I say, I believe in the same socialism that... George Jackson talked about, you know.
Well, you know, you have such a... You found all these wonderful quotes. Here's one of them. This is Malcolm X speaking. Most of the countries that were colonial powers were capitalist countries, and the last bulwark of capitalism today is America. It's impossible for a white person to believe in capitalism and not believe in racism. You can't have capitalism without racism. That's a powerful... I should finish it off. It says, and if you find one and you happen to get that person into conversation and they have a philosophy that makes you sure they don't have this racism in their outlook, usually they're socialists or their political philosophy is socialist.
Right, right. And
can I find that? That's a great quote.
It's in many of his books, but Malcolm X speaks. I can send it directly, but I wanted to say, go on record as saying that some of the left, the white left, have a problem with racism too.
They definitely do.
You can be a white socialist and still be have a racial problem. And I have a lot of problems with white socialists because they say that I'm a racist. I'm a racist because I consider myself an African and not an American. So therefore, people like myself, we are splitting the working class.
Yeah.
But the issue is that we're supposed to follow them, or we're supposed to be follow their orders. And they're the leadership.
Yeah.
And we do the fighting. They do the theoretical work. But you know. We go out and fight the police, and they do all the theoretical work. That's an argument that I have.
Yeah, it's very important. It's almost folklore. It's not as though we're being exactly precise or in that sense. But the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, they would say, is so-and-so a communist? And they say, yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence. What is the evidence? He has Negroes come to his house. And the FBI said, I found a red. You know, it's very important. I want to thank you. This is we've been talking to Norman Otis Richmond. The title of the article is Malcolm X in the 21st Century, and it's published by Pambazuka News, and it's also in Counterpunch and the Black Agenda Report. I'm really glad it's getting wide circulation. I urge everybody to read it. It's published Thursday.
It hasn't been published in Now or Rebel.com. Let's put that on the record.
Yeah, we have to ask them, you have a problem with Malcolm or what? Maybe you got a quote in there they don't like. I don't know. I'm sure they'll grab it up and publish it. It's a great piece. Norman, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. This is Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. It is Victoria Day. And in French Canada, it is National Patriots Day. We had a patriotic revolution here, a movement led by William Lyon Mackenzie, and it was crushed. And he had a flag, and if you want to see the flag, you can go to French Canada, Quebec. There's a museum, and the flag of the Upper Canadian Patriots is there. Their day is not celebrated. It's not permitted. No es permiso. So just a little fact. This is Taylor Report. We're going to be speaking shortly about the Magnitsky Affair, it's sometimes called that, with, we hope, David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer. We could play a bit of a little more of Archie Shepp while we're waiting to get David on the line.